Chapter 41, Gethsemane. Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Jesus. 1907. The Broadway magazine published a, quote, history of Christian Science in New York City, which Mrs. Stetson sent to the leader with the statement, quote, "We are not pleased with this story because it says too much in praise of our church and of me, and for this reason, we do not think it wise to circulate it." End quote. Evidently, Mrs. Eddy did not feel that way, for the article was the leader in the Sentinel of May 4th. About this time, Mark Twain and Lyman Powell both came out with books which were bitter attacks against Christian Science, the faith, and its founder, as Paul titled his assault. The Cosmopolitan magazine for May published an article entitled, quote, "Mark Twain, Mrs. Eddy, and Christian Science," end quote, the first part of which was quotations from Twain's volume. Edward A. Kimball had been asked by the editors to write an answer, which stated in part, "It almost seemed as though everyone who cared to cast a stone at Christian Science or was willing to wound the leader had already put his hand to such endeavor, when, lo, there appeared a new and unexpected participant to reinforce the efforts of those who are intent upon detraction and ruin. A man whose wit had been the object of a nation's admiration comes with deliberate offensiveness to denominate Mrs. Eddy a liar and a fraud. It matters not that hundreds of thousands of grateful hearts hold her in high esteem for what she has done for them and for the world. Christian Science is surrounded by every conceivable form of antagonism and will continue to abide, if need be, in the storm, until the ingenuity of hostility shall have exhausted itself, until the persecution shall have done its utmost, and until mortals learn of the consummate beneficence of Christian Science and of its limitless value to all men." McClure's magazine for May continued with its biased history, painting glowing pictures of Richard Kennedy and others who opposed their teacher while belittling Mrs. Eddy with misrepresentation of facts as well as blatant lies. Again attributing Christian Science to Quimby, Miss Milmine quotes an affidavit of Daniel H. Spofford. She does, however, make this one true statement. Quote, "Mr. Spofford still says that no price could be put upon what Mrs. Glover gave her students, and that the mere manuscripts which he had formerly studied were, compared to her expounding of them, as the printed page of a musical score compared to its interpretation by a master." End quote. The affidavit quoted caused Sybil Wilbur to visit Mr. Spofford in his home near Amesbury. Miss Wilbur wrote of this visit, "I went for the express purpose of asking him to explain the discrepancy between his statements of Mrs. Eddy's teachings, the one in his affidavit printed in McClure's magazine for May 1907, and the one in the resolution he helped to draw up in 1875. Mr. Spofford is today a man about 65, slightly bent in carriage, with clear blue eyes and whitened hair. His manner is very gentle and courteous, and his personality sensitive, and I should say idealistic. Mr. Spofford made no immediate reply to my question as to the disparity. After some hesitation, he turned from the question by saying, quote, I believe Mrs. Eddy is the sole author of Science and Health, and I believe it is the greatest book in the world, outside the Bible. I don't wish it to be understood that I have said Christian Science is Quimbyism. I said that Mrs. Eddy taught some of the Quimby doctrine when I first knew her in 1870. Mrs. Eddy developed her own ideas and wrote her own book, Science and Health, and I was the publisher of the first edition, and I know that book thoroughly. I don't confuse in my own mind the work of Quimby and of Mrs. Eddy. I don't see why the world should do so. It is clear to me that Mrs. Eddy at first taught some of the ideas of Quimby, that later she abandoned those ideas entirely for her own, incorporating her own system of religious interpretation in her book. End quote. Mrs. Eddy kept her students working metaphysically and endeavored to impress upon them the importance of keeping their thoughts spiritually elevated, so they were ready to meet quickly whatever presented itself. Mr. Carpenter has said that if one in the household had a physical claim and needed help, she would look the household over and select the one whose thought was highest. She would then give from 15 to 20 minutes for this work. If one was unsuccessful, she would select one who could quickly lift his thought to the required healing level until the results were obtained. She also regularly assigned specific work to advanced and dependable students outside the home, thus causing them to elevate their own thought. If a student is working to help a director, lecturer, architect, builder, etc., as the case may be, he is far less apt to indulge in gossip, speculation, criticism, which amounts to mental malpractice. On May 20th, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Henrietta Shenfrau, You are to take up work for Miss Wilbur, as Mother said when you were last here. It is possible that others, too, were helping Miss Wilbur, but whether or no, she wrote Mrs. Eddy on May 22nd. It is a remarkable experience which I am passing through, following in your footsteps, observing the impressions which your acts made upon others and their acts upon your life. I don't know how it is done. I don't know what force or power accomplishes it, but every one of your so-called enemies receives me, answers my questions, and in some way confuses himself in his own falsehoods, or, with amazing frankness, tells the truth. Of these witnesses, there are those who have sworn to other statements, and when I have addressed them on certain matters, they have allowed the truth to escape, as it were, inadvertently. Quote, Atonement and Eucharist, end quote. And, quote, Footsteps of Truth, end quote. And, quote, Pawn and Purpose, end quote, were not written by the woman painted in dyes of deception, with a brain teeming with worldly design. It is my intent and desire to make the whole world outside your church realize this. One of Mrs. Eddy's letters that has been often copied and quoted was written to Mrs. Stetson on May 1st. My darling student, yours read and understood. Now, let me forewarn you to make no more investigations at the White House and send no more of my publications, nor those of other scientists there, till the new president is elected, whoever he be, and not then. Remember this, that I charge you, in other words, avoid being identified, pro or con, in politics. If you do otherwise, it will hinder our cause. Remember this. Keep out of the reach of such subjects. Give all your attention to the moral and spiritual status of the race. God alone is capable of government. You are not. I am not. But God has governed through His anointed and appointed one in the way of divine science, not politics, nor the making or breaking of national laws or institutions. He, God, alone is capable of this. On the 7th of May, the leader told the mental workers in her home something that should cause every serious student to study and ponder all he can find about her instruction at Pleasant View. That is, there is one thing needed all over the field and which is only supplied here and might not be supplied in the field in centuries. That is, to have but one God, divine principle, and its demonstration. She also told them that day that everyone wants to get rid of death, and there is only one way, by realizing the sense of life. Quote, "You may die a thousand deaths until you realize this, for it is the only way." End quote. On May 9th, the leader opened her Bible to Matthew 26. She said to her disciples, quote, "History repeats itself, but in different forms, now without the crucifixion." End quote. Did any of the students who heard her say this ever know that her story, as it was unfolding in May of 1907, could be read in the 26th chapter of Matthew? Matthew 26. "Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes, and consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety. The master saith, My time is at hand. And as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed it, and brake it, and gave it to the disciples, and said, Take, eat, this is my body. And he took the cup, and gave thanks, and gave it to them, saying, Drink ye all of it. For this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. Then saith Jesus unto them, All ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. It is written, quote, Within 3 years, as the years of an hireling, and the glory of Moab shall be contemned, with all that great multitude, and the remnant shall be very small and feeble. End quote. Jesus' next experience in Matthew 26 was his night of agony in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he asked his closest disciples to watch with him, and they did not. Some of Mrs. Eddy's statements which have been recorded are, quote, "Stand alone. Never allow anyone to help you. As sure as you do, you cripple yourself. You weaken your power. When you have all you can bear, and even more than you think you can bear, go and say, Watch with me 1 hour. And then, once more, take your stand." End quote. And again, quote, "Never ask for help, except you come to the agony of the garden." End quote. The mother in Israel had been ministering to her children for 40 years. Now she had come to the garden and was asking some of them to watch with her. She said to her students, as recorded by Calvin Frye, quote, "If you are faithful and watch with me in my Gethsemane, you will learn your way through," end quote. She was enduring, quote, "the agony of the garden," end quote, for the benefit of her dear children, for all time to come. Not for herself, and at least one of those children saw this fact. A grateful letter from a student in Los Angeles, Mrs. Mary E. Backus, to her, quote, "beloved leader," end quote, said in part, "I enclose in this letter an extract from Tent Life in Siberia by George Kennan, which tells of a wonderful phenomena, February 26, 1866. Siberia typifies to me the, quote, long cold night of discord, end quote, and the heavens divinely illumined told of the light coming to the world again. The two arches mentioned by Mr. Kennan signified to me the first and second appearing of truth. For years, I have wondered if some physical phenomena, which we had been too much asleep to appreciate, had not heralded this second appearing of truth. I have been loath to trespass upon your time, and have waited nearly 2 years before telling you this. But now, more than ever before, my heart goes out to you in this hour of trial. I know you are enduring this because of your great love for humanity, for you yourself do not need the fiery baptism. Enoch and Elijah walked with God and departed, but Jesus, whose teachings you are emphasizing, demonstrated the way of life for the world." Surely this letter of appreciation and recognition touched the leader's heart. She sent it to her editor for publication, and when it appeared in the Sentinel of May 11th, quote, "Arctic Aurora," end quote, also appeared as the leader in the same issue. Part of the leader's lesson on May 14th was, "God has worked through one in this age because he could. The light will come through the window because it will let it, while the wall will not. It would shine through the wall if it could. God is no respecter of persons. Then would you say the wall can let in the light the same as the window? No. Then does one person let in as much light as another? No. Can the one who lets in the light see what is best for the others, better than the one who does not? Yes. That is the trouble with those outside the wall. They think they can run things just as well and a little better than I can." The window pane. On May 16th, the leader told her students that if they have to argue, to be very careful what they argue. But on that day, she also defined the standard for a Christian Scientist. Quote, "If you are a Christian Scientist and can speak the word and it is done, all right," end quote. On May 19th, she told them, quote, "You can heal ignorant sin, but willful sin must be suffered out," end quote. During this time, she was meeting often with her lawyers at Pleasant View. On May 16th, she wrote out her affidavit for the trial, which was in the form of a personal letter to Judge Chamberlain. Miscellany, page 137, in her own handwriting, which was very firm and distinctive. This letter alone, which was filed on May 18th, should have been sufficient to end this action. But the enemy was continuing to try the woman with false evidence in the newspapers. William Nixon had written to Laura Fulmer near the end of April that Chandler was making a, quote, real picnic, end quote, out of the case. And more than one front page story by Nixon against Christian Science and Mrs. Eddy appeared in the Boston Herald in May. In a lecture in Manchester, New Hampshire, in May, the Honorable Clarence A. Buskirk said, "The evidence has become incontestable that Christian Science is truly healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease. Now its opponents are turning their attention to procuring yellow journalism to attack its founder and leader, the Reverend Mary Baker G. Eddy. They have left the field of fair argument and are appealing to prejudice with ad captandum for the sake of pleasing the crowd, personal attacks. They now theorize that because, as they say, she is over 85 years old, she must therefore be incapable of managing her own business affairs, and are petitioning the courts to be allowed to manage her property for her. They are daily filing the papers with artful, insinuative gossip and mendacious inventions. They are trying their case through the newspapers by means of anonymous evidence and fabricated facts. Mrs. Eddy stands today the foremost woman and public benefactor of our age, because she has furnished to the world what all its gold and silver could never buy. During long years, misunderstood, misrepresented, too often falsely maligned and reviled, she has been sustained by the high consciousness that she is working for God and for humanity." Comparatively few had heard Buskirk's honest facts in refutation of the enemy's, quote, mendacious inventions, end quote, by May 23rd, when there was a hearing for the trustee's motion in Judge Chamberlain's courtroom. Little wonder the leader had recently said that you cannot heal willful sin. It must be suffered out. Chandler was surely lending himself a willing tool to malicious mind when he said of God's chosen witness, quote, "The poor woman is crazy," end quote. He also stated to the court that because of the, quote, "incompetency of this aged, palsied woman," end quote, she was unable to do anything of her own free will, and that Calvin Fry and the other defendants were, quote, "prepared to inflict any torture on Mrs. Eddy to make her do what they want," end quote. He was a little less critical of Baker, Fernald, and McClellan when he described them as, quote, "the three most capable trustees to take care of a lunatic that ever were," end quote. Such blatant falsehoods were totally unrelated to God's messenger, and she knew it. But they did reach her in an indirect way through the thoughts of her students. She was constantly having to write to one or another of those closest to her, quote, "Do not think of me," end quote, or, quote, "Keep me out of your thoughts," end quote. She had written this to Calvin Hill in earlier years, and once again in 1907 she wrote him, quote, "Again, I have to write. Do not think of me. Your tender thought reaches me, costs me much. Leave me in God alone. He loves us both. I love all, friends and enemies." End quote. The students had no understanding that it was their thoughts that caused the leader to suffer. And so many thought of her so often that she did not always immediately pinpoint the erroneous thought that was reaching her and causing her suffering. Mr. Hill loved the leader dearly and often let his tenderest thoughts rest upon her, but he had not been able to love his or her enemies as she taught and practiced. When he was discussing the lawsuit with her one day, he said that he would like to go wring the necks of those who are responsible for this outrage against an innocent and good woman. Immediately, Mrs. Eddy answered, quote, "Now you've helped me," end quote. She saw instantly that he was letting the enemy use him as a channel to reach her, instead of meeting this evil and overcoming it in his own thought. The students were such babes in their comprehension of how to work for their leader and for the cause. At one time when Mrs. Eddy was giving them vital instruction in this regard, she said to Laura Sargent, quote, "Go write it, go write it," end quote. Laura returned with this. She said, when we take up our watch, we do not help her with our thought. We simply clear our own thought of its belief of evil, and this is getting rid of our thought and getting out of God's way so the light can shine through. And this blessed light helps us and all in its shining. This is the blessed way from sense to soul. Mrs. Eddy read what Laura had written and then wrote upon the page, quote, "Well done, mother," end quote. On May 24th, Mrs. Eddy said to her metaphysical workers, "There are three things to keep before us continually: to have one God, one mind, to love our neighbor as ourselves, and do unto others as we would have others do unto us." To have one mind means for all to work alike. Not you work in your work and I in my work, but work together. It is time for us today to be Christian Scientists and keep these points before us by asking ourselves these questions every time before doing anything. While the leader was meeting the malice of the world at Pleasant View, the cause prospered in the world as never before. A May Sentinel told of phenomenal success in London. Bicknell Young had lectured to an audience of 9,900. The leader may well have asked, what of the healing? Perhaps there had been some, for that was not uncommon at lectures. But the letter from London did not mention it. One student from London, after studying Christian Science, had come to America for the express purpose of serving the leader. But when Mrs. Mackenzie had taken Adelaide Still to meet Mrs. Eddy, the interview was short, and the leader did not accept Miss Still's service. However, this English woman did have a true desire to serve the leader, and when a position to help in the kitchen was offered her in May, she accepted it and moved to Pleasant View. In this position, she did not meet with Mrs. Eddy, and was not included in the morning lessons for the mental workers. On May 25th, part of the leader's lesson was, God is all. To have God is to have all. Harmony. Discord comes from looking away from all, thinking there is something else. The next day, her lesson included, what I am reaching is the spiritual. The material fights it, and I fight the material. It will do it to you. The more spiritual the thought, the more will you be fought. That which takes the place of God and creates men and women and sees everything material will fight the spiritual. We must see everything spiritual. To sense, I am on the cross. Am I? No. What makes me on the cross? The belief that I am there. See me and others all right, as a spiritual idea, and not on the cross. Then you will see me as I am. The leader's lesson of May 30th dealt with reversal and true law. She said, God's laws are eternal. They cannot be reversed. They stand. In your work, you declare the truth about things. No, those declarations cannot be reversed. I have, for 40 years, stood with God through all this effort to reverse my work. If I had allowed the devil to reverse my work, where would it have been? No, I have stood and carried this cause in spite of it, and all of you can do the same. Are the laws of health to be relied upon? No, they are material. Are the laws of husbands, wives, sons, etc., to be relied upon? No. God is infinite. Is there anything else? No. He is the only lawgiver. Hold to it. There is but one law, and that is the law of love. Life.